And there's a little garbage for you in the morning. Actually, that's literal. That's the name of the artist. Good morning. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and welcome to The Conversation. Hello there, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Hey, there's sort of a novel notion in play here. Do we need to generate more trash?
Well, that's one of the questions that's going to be answered within the HPR initiative, Trashing Paradise. And we're going to get started with that now. You've heard those words, reduce, reuse, recycle. Yeah, we've heard those words a lot over the past couple of decades. Still, we make a lot of trash in Hawaii. On Oahu alone, about 600,000 tons of it. And although that may sound like a huge amount, not making more could be costing us. That's one of the issues HPR is considering in Trashing Paradise. First, though, we're going to get a little history of how we got to this point with HPR's news director, Bill Dorman, who joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
So we always wrestle with this idea of trash, and you know some people have little composting going on and little things we've been told what we can do, but still the overarching issue is that we have a lot of trash and we're trying to figure out what to do with it and what to do with it appropriately. But once upon a time, it wasn't like that.
Well, civilization in all forms, of course, always has had trash since the beginning. It's just part of a function of life. But what you do with that is complicated for us, of course, in an island situation. It's interesting if you go back to even just on Oahu in the 1920s, there was a 1925 report that said, at the very longest from the present outlook, it's but a matter of a year or two until either a different method must be provided for waste disposal, they're talking, or additional lands allowed for the disposal of refuse. So they're talking in the 1920s about running out of room. They did an experiment, actually, in 1928 about dumping garbage in the ocean. And they found that if you take it 5 to 10 miles southwest of the harbor, would have no tendency to drift back to shore and would probably drift clear of any portion of the Hawaiian Islands. 1930s, you get incinerators being built for the first time. So, again, this sort of going through different methods of a universal problem of what to do with trash.
Well, once upon a time, that trash used to sort of be segregated. You had organic matter, and some of that was winding up as, you know, piggy feed and other things that, you know, if it came from the ocean, it went back to the ocean. It seems to come back from whence it came.
And more of a circle on that. And I got to refer to this. There's a great website, opala.org, has a Garbage in Paradise City and Council of Honolulu Department of Environmental Services, a man named Frank Young, who passed away a number of years ago. But he wrote up this wonderful history of the evolution of a lot of these things, and it's true that in the 20s and the 30s, pig slop was such a valuable commercial commodity that the separation of waste was done not out of some high-minded, this is best for the environment. It's because this is worth money, and this isn't part of the economic reality. And so that layer of economic reality on top of the Opala situation is something that I think you need to keep in mind, not just through history, but also for where we are now and some of the choices that we face going ahead.
Because once upon a time when Hawaii Kai and Kahala were, you know, piggy farms, that might have made sense in that way, but we got a lot of houses now and more coming. How is it that we look at how much trash we produce and where it's going to effectively go? And we hear people say, oh, it's going to go to H-Power. They're going to burn it. And then we have movements on college campuses and at schools that say, no, you don't want to have any organic matter in there because that decreases the effectiveness of H-Power. So that really needs to be segregated again. And then there's the whole point of, well, are we producing enough trash, as we talked about in the opening, to be able to make this thing a cost-effective proposition?
It's true. So a lot of movement of on the economic front also has to do with government regulations. So as landfill laws across the United States were tightened largely in the 1990s, there was a large attraction for what they call these waste-to-energy plants. And the idea just sounds, oh my goodness, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could just burn your trash, produce energy, and everything would be wonderful, and that would take care of, you know, killing two birds with one stone. As with so many other things in life, it's a bit more complicated than that. And on these waste-to-energy facilities, on a lot, number one, they're very expensive facilities to build, to maintain. The contract, specifically with H-Power, it's under a condition called put or pay that you put in our case on Oahu, we need to supply 800,000 tons a year. As you mentioned, in the last fiscal year, we had 600,000 tons, and that wound up in the city and county of Honolulu paying more than $1 million, $1.1 million.
And those are taxpayer dollars.
Those are taxpayer dollars. That is part of the economic picture of this. Now, you also sort of need to step back and take a look at, okay, what sort of consumer behavior does this incentivize when it comes to recycling? Because, yes, recycling, reuse, reduce, recycle. And yet, if it's, well, just sort of toss it into H-Power because it's
because
just going to burn
they
anyway.
Need the trash.
Exactly. It's our patriotic duty. It sort of puts some, turns some things on its head a little bit under the banner of unintended consequences. But again, this is a complicated issue because one other point I would just say on waste to energy, by the way, when that came out, waste to energy qualifies under a decision made at the Environmental Protection Agency as renewable energy. So that's the same category: wind, solar, geothermal, other renewable. Because the finding from the EPA was that garbage is an infinite supply. It's not something that is going to run out. So based on that line of thinking, it qualifies as a renewable energy source, which then adds another layer for policymakers who say, ooh, not only do we burn waste, we produce electricity, but this counts as renewable energy.
Which makes it all look very, very good and very, very attractive. But more importantly, it's sending a very mixed message to people because there's been so much activity that's been done to generate campaigns to tell us about recycling. Many organizations that are looking to that, we, you know, had bins and then the sort of bins went away depending upon where you are, that we keep getting these very mixed messages. And at the same time, we're also having to foot the bill for H-Power.
There are a lot of layers to this story as well, and they vary a bit island by island. Some carry through the state, and so it's going to take us more than 5 days to go through this, but we'll be going through some aspects of this, raising some questions and, again, some points of awareness that people might not have thought about. And again, when as we weigh options and decisions for the future, things to bear in mind. Little context, little background. Never hurt anybody.
And a lot of nuance, too, that maybe we haven't paid attention to in past because it looks so good just to take your trash and burn it or do something else with it. Thank you, Bill, very much. We're looking forward to the series coming out of the news department, and we'll be having some talk about that, too, as we go through this week in HPR's initiative, Trashing Paradise.